Now, Satan immediately starts to destroy, if he can, God's faithfulness. The minute that the promise goes to Judah, Satan's going to go to work to ruin that line if he can. And as you follow the history, both the houses of Judah and the house of Israel fell into decay. And yet God's promises never fail. So God reached down on earth and picked a man before he was ever born and gave him an assignment. The book of the prophet Jeremiah, chapter 1. The words of Jeremiah the prophet, page 817. The words of Jeremiah the prophet. To whom the word of the Lord came in the days of Josiah the son of Amon, king of Judah. It came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the carrying away of Jerusalem captive in the 5th month. Those three verses catalog the time span by identification with king's lists that Jeremiah was going to prophesy. The word of the Lord came unto me, verse 4 says, saying, before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Now, there's a mystery for you. Boy, that ought to blow the minds of the people trying to wrestle with abortion. And that's a subject I stay humble on. I haven't got a final answer for that one. But there are people trying to figure out, where does life start? What if the mother of Jeremiah decided to abort? You know, we have a colloquial saying that would fit here. The Lord saying to him, I knew you before the gleam ever appeared in your father's eye. And that's amazing to me. Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Poor kid. He doesn't have, you know, I've hated the fact that as a preacher's kid, I spent so many years of my life with no freedom. There have been times I wish I'd been born a heathen and could have done naturally things I want to do without knowing they were wrong. But I was born preacher's kid. What's worse, grew up in a church where a lot of things that aren't wrong were told as wrong. That was awful. I was the best marble shooter in town. And I have to give away all the marbles I won because you weren't supposed to play for keeps. Where's that verse of Scripture? I'm not getting any sympathy today at all. I mean, I'd come home with those bags of marbles and have to hide them or give them away. I was the marble king of the second grade. But you couldn't play keeps. That's gambling. Gambling, heck, I was skillful. Couldn't play basketball. 6 years old, 5 years old in kindergarten, couldn't play basketball because sin to wear shorts. Spindly five-year-old legs. But I have nothing to complain about. I kicked around my mama's belly a while before I came out the gate with nobody putting any trips on me. This poor guy, God had a hold on him before he ever was formed. Tell me God's no respecter of persons and he treats everybody alike? Some of you people are just plain accidents. Jeremiah was pre-planned. God does what he wants. Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee. And I ordained thee a prophet unto the nations. My Lord, that's enough to inhibit a guy's natural processes. An ordained prophet before he's born? You don't even dare wet the bed. This is Playboy time, isn't it? I think you ought to really think about that for a moment. God decided he was so fed up, in order to keep his word, he ordered a birth before the embryo was formed, and he claimed that life before it came out of the tomb. I mean, out of the womb. Getting late, a lot of hours, 3 days. Now, God says, I'm God and I change not. Is it possible that God still chooses people when he has a job to do? I could preach on this all day. Because, see, I'm going to go on and show you. I made that little comment. You know, I can't really see an ordained preacher wearing diapers. That's what he was. He was an ordained preacher. Marjo does not have the record of being the youngest prophet. Jeremiah does. I mean, that's enough to give a certain kind of intimidation to the doctor or the midwife that swats him on the bottom and brings the first cry out of him. God's mouthpiece! Ah! Ordained preacher. Right? Now, the point I'm going to make is he still was a kind of a crackpot at times and an ordinary hunk of clay. But God picked him. We got a cynical world, doesn't believe any of this. I ordained thee a prophet unto the nation before you were ever born. Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, I can't speak, for I am a child. The Lord said unto me, Say not, I am a child, for thou shalt go to all that I shall send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. If I may be allowed to say it for a moment. There's only one reason I'm a preacher, because I don't like being a preacher. There's only one reason. God laid his hand on me. Now, man's gift maketh room for him. Proof of pudding's eating. If what I believe is true, God called me to teach. And the Ephesian letter says that teachers are not made. They are God's gift. You either got it or you ain't. There are lots of people teaching that shouldn't be teaching. If you got it, and God set you in the church, I got news for all my enemies. There ain't no power on earth that can silence me. No power on earth that can silence me. And every time anybody tries it, they may put out one light, 1,000 will come on. Furthermore, I'll tell you something else. If they can silence me, then God's either through with me, or he didn't call me in the first place. And you know what? I'm willing to live with that risk. But every time somebody tries to put the voice out and you see it crop out somewhere else, it maybe is time to consider the possibility God wants the voice to be heard. Well, I don't like you. Most people do, by the way. There's just a vocal minority that do not like me. Most people like me. I'm just so sweet, I don't see how you can keep from it. Jeremiah wasn't all that likable. Elijah wasn't. I know Elijah had B.O. that you could smell for a quarter of a mile. See, I've been around some of those people who live in the desert and don't have any water to bathe with. Let me go on. He said, I can't speak. The Lord said, Say not, I am a child, for thou shalt go to all that I shall send thee. You ain't got no choice, kid. Oh, Lord, I want to go to a beach. How many times have you heard me say that? You don't hear me say it as often anymore. I'm making progress. Oh, I never went to Pastor Faith Center. Some jackass told my people today that they were being preached to by a guy named Jack Cass. I wish people would listen to my enunciation and I would not be misquoted. Jack Cass, C-A-S-S. In fact, I wrote a little satire once, you know, the ventures of V.C. Pilgrim in King Dollar's Court. He's always having to contend with this super businessman. Belonged to the big blowhard businessmen's convention. J. Cash Demas. Now, he was always trying to get poor old V.C. Pilgrim involved, but I can't get on a side trip. I'll talk about V.C. Pilgrim and King Dollar's Court some other time. The point I make is, when God lays his hand on you, my friend, he's the boss. You'll do it willingly or unwillingly. God's in control. He said, you're going to go to whomever I send you, and whatsoever I command thee, you're going to speak. Be not afraid of their faces, for I'm with thee to deliver thee, saith the Lord. Then the Lord put forth his hand, touched my mouth, and the Lord said unto me, behold, I put my words in thy mouth. And here's the promise. All that was introduction. 10th verse, number 22. See, I have this day set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms to root out, to pull down, to destroy, to throw down, to build, to plant. What nations? God's only concerned in the whole book of Jeremiah with these two nations. And the nations that God put Jeremiah over were the nations of Judah and Israel. The house of Judah, the southern kingdom, the house of Israel, sometimes called Samaria, sometimes called Ephraim, sometimes called the house of Israel. What God says, I have given promises. My word is going to be carried out in spite of them. Doesn't matter what they think. My word is going to be carried out. How can you lose anything this big? Where is it? Can't you find it? You got a camera. Where is that? You're always running around looking for things, Mike. Don't let me lose that anymore. God has now divided the birthright with the house of Joseph and the specific elements with the house of Judah. Both houses have canceled out any right to it by their performance. God says, okay, I'm going to appoint a receivership. I'm going to take it away from them, appoint a receivership, and I'm going to appoint a trustee who will make sure that my word is carried out in spite of these idiots. So he said, I'm going to cause somebody to be born. Before he's ever born, I form him. And I'm going to sanctify him, and I'm going to call him, and he's going to be the trustee. You'll never understand the promises of God until you understand this receivership that God established. Because of the failures of both Israel and Judah, including the descendants of David, to whom God had given the promise of a perpetual kingdom, God had to appoint a receiver to come into these spiritually bankrupt nations and reorganize them. And he gave a specific assignment to this trustee. And all the natural rights of birth are given in trusteeship to this sanctified, picked, and formed man of God called Jeremiah. There is hardly a book in the Bible as important as Jeremiah, and very few Christians understand it. He says, see, I have this day set thee over the nations. Anybody knows anything about modern law knows a district judge can down here establish a receivership. In this current famous trial of DeLorean, the judge just ordered a fixing of the assets from the sale of some company. You think a judge has power? God says, All right, every right from this birthright promise, I'm going to appoint a receivership. Jeremiah, you're it. See, I have this day set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms to root out, to pull down. This is his assignment. The receiver's got to do each of these things. To root out. To pull down. To destroy. To throw down. He's placed over the nations. He is to root out, pull down, destroy, throw down, both. The house of Joseph and the house of Judah. Every Bible scholar agrees Jeremiah did that. They all will preach on that. He prophesied through five kings of Judah and told of their downfall. He so angered the princes around Zedekiah, they said, throw him in a pit. This man destroys the morale of the people. He seeks not their welfare. He says Jerusalem's going to be destroyed. They put him in a pit up to his knees in mud. He keeps right on prophesying, doing his trusteeship. Very few evangelical Christians pay attention to the other two. To build and to plant. Where did he do that? The whole book of Jeremiah records the activity, and the surrounding historical books surrounding this prophecy tell the story of his rooting out, pulling down, destroying, and throwing down of these kingdoms. Now, the promise 22 is, where did he build? Where did he plant? You want to tell me? Where? Now, how come you can't find a grave of Jeremiah in Palestine? How come a man given an assignment as important as this, where God makes him the receiver and trusteeship of all the birthright promises to the natural descendants of Abraham, both the Jew and the house of Israel, how come? Where did he do his building and where did he do his planting? Anybody want to tell me? And how come we can't find where he went? I go to page 8. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
Go to page 820. That was promise number 22. Write it down, because we're going to find out. Don't you think it's important to try to find out? What if Jeremiah just did 4/6 of his assignment? He did a good job tearing down, but he abandoned the job, didn't build and didn't plant. God's a liar. You say, well, Jeremiah's to blame. No. Because God said to him, you're not going to have a choice. I'm going to send thee, and you're going to go, and you're going to speak what I say speak. God has decided to do it through, he could have done it through a pigeon, but he chose to do it through Jeremiah. Now let's go to Jeremiah chapter 3, page 820. Jeremiah is doing some of his work. The Lord said also unto me in the days of Josiah the king, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel hath done? This tells you that God knows the difference between the two, the house of Joseph and the house of Judah. Hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel hath done? She's gone. Now, I've read all these anti-cult books, and I'm not a cult. I'm a historic churchman. I pastor a 38-year-old church and head a denomination of historic churches. Or 35, or whatever it is, however many years old it is. 35, not 38. But I refuse to let some simpleton who took a quick look at some British Israelite theory and wrote a little thesis in a two-bit school to make a reputation fighting a straw man that didn't exist intimidate me on the subject. There are lots of verses that the anti-cult manuals haven't answered for me. And I haven't resolved all the questions yet. I'm just determined that God's Word can get its chance to be verified. They are not one and the same. The Lord said unto me in the days of Josiah, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel hath done? She's gone up upon every high mountain under every green tree, and there played the harlot. Oh, my Lord, here we are, Sunday afternoon time. Just can't read the Bible on some of these stations. No way. And I said, after she had done all these things, turn thou unto me. But she returned not. And her treacherous sister Judah saw it. God still sees them as two sisters. And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce. Remember that from today's message? Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not and went and played the harlot also. Oh, there, that word again. And that means that really, what they really did is they didn't bring their Bible to Sunday school. And it came to pass through the lightness of her... Oh, Lord, you can't read this chapter. It came to pass through the lightness of her whoredom that she defiled the land. Old English is funny, you know. You know what that means, lightness? If you shine a very bright light, a spotlight, it's easy to see. I mean, you know, turn a little old pencil-thin flashlight on in a room, you can burglarize the place, and people won't even know you're there. You got a little old pencil light. But you turn all the lights on in the house to perform your burglary, and somebody's going to know somebody's there. The lightness of the house will give you away. It doesn't have anything to do with calories and weight. It means she was so brazen that she defiled the whole land and committed adultery with stones and stocks. And yet for all this, her treacherous sister Judah had not turned unto me with her whole heart, but faked it, saith the Lord. And the Lord said unto me, the backsliding Israel hath justified herself more than treacherous Judah. So, okay, I want you to do something, Jeremiah. Go and proclaim these words toward the north and say, return, thou backsliding Israel, saith the Lord, and I will not cause mine anger to fall upon you, for I am merciful, saith the Lord, and I will not keep anger forever. Jeremiah is already told in the first chapter that he's going to go and speak where God tells him to go and speak and say what God tells him to say. God says, go and proclaim these words toward the north. And say, return, thou backsliding Israel. That's the house of Israel, already carried into bondage in Assyria. Already. Long before Judah falls, carried into bondage. Now, where and when did Jeremiah carry this out? Preaching to the people in Jerusalem didn't do it. And say this to them, only acknowledge thine iniquity that thou hast. The 23rd promise is verse 12 of Jeremiah 3. Only acknowledge thine iniquity that thou hast transgressed against the Lord thy God and hast scattered thy ways to the strangers under every green tree, and ye have not obeyed my voice, saith the Lord. Turn, O backsliding children, saith the Lord, for I am married unto you. And I will take you one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion. That's 23a. When has the Lord done that? It's the lost tribes. When have they been taken? One of a city and two of a family and brought to Zion. When did that happen? Verse 15, and I will give you pastors according to mine heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. Verse 15 is promise number 24. When did that happen? Now, if the lost tribes went to Britain, Joseph of Arimathea was such a pastor. The Apostle Paul was such a pastor. Simon the Zealot was such a pastor. If Ephraim and Manasseh became the British Empire and the United States, I just might qualify. Any pastor who's giving understanding might be qualifying as the word is going out. But assume that's not true, where is it happening? God's word has to come to pass. And it shall come to pass when ye be multiplied and increased in the land. Isn't that what Hosea said would happen? They'd be multiplied, increased in the land. In those days, saith the Lord, they shall say no more, the ark of the covenant of the Lord. Neither shall it come to mind, neither shall they remember it, neither shall they visit it, neither shall that be done anymore. Well, the lost tribes couldn't be in Northwest Europe or the Celts or the British Isles because they'd be worshiping the ark. They'd be acting like good Sabbath-keeping Jews. It should come to pass when ye be multiplied and increased in the land and their scattered state, not having mercy, not being called my people, they're going to forget the Ark of the Covenant. It won't even come to mind. That's number 25. Verse 18 is number 26. In those days the house of Judah shall walk with the house of Israel, and they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land that I've given for an inheritance unto your fathers. When did that happen? Yeah, how many of you have in the margin, instead of shall walk with, shall walk to? Now let's read it that way. In those days, the house of Judah shall walk to the house of Israel, and they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land that I've given for an inheritance unto your fathers. By the way, there is no such thing as northwest in that language. So north would include northwest. When has that happened? But if, for example, the British Empire was that fulfillment of the promise of a commonwealth of nations to Ephraim, what an accident of history. What an accident of history. That exactly 2,520 years from a very important date that I'm going to skip over at this point, General Allenby frees Jerusalem from the Turks. And he's a British. How significant that of the Allies, Palestine is given to Britain. How interesting that powerful Jews must walk to the British Empire and the United States, possibly Ephraim and Manasseh, to get the help that opens Israel for the first time as a homeland for the Jews, and from these Anglo-Saxon nations, 100,000 a month is the average. 4 or 5 years ago, I don't know what it is now, walking through those sacred sites now maintained by the state Israel. Check the tourists and see where they come from. Since the Korean revival, many come from there, but it's a drop in the bucket. It's the Anglo-Saxon, Bible-believing Christian nations that want to make that pilgrimage to Jerusalem. To quote, walk where Jesus walked. The Jew, Judah, shall walk to the house of Israel, and they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land I've given you for an inheritance to your fathers. Verse 18 is promised 26 and 27. All I'm saying, because I've taught on it for so long, find your candidate. Where is the house of Israel? They're going to walk to China? They're going to walk to Argentina? They're going to walk to Russia? And who? There are just as many Anglo-Saxon Christians that have gone to and from Israel since that nation has been opened as the Jews. If it's not the British Empire and the United States, then God got outsmarted. The British Empire and the United States have seized the promise from the 10 tribes. Go to page 835. Jeremiah is given the prophecy still. He's upset. Not such a wonderful preacher. He got caught with his guard down. Verse 10, page 835, chapter 15. He's upset. Woe is me, he says. Woe is my mother, that thou hast borne me a man of strife and a man of contention to the whole earth. Now the dirty rat ought to have his head knocked off. He's blaming his mother. When God already told him, God planned it before the gleam went in his dad's eye. Woe is me, my mother. Can I plow on through this? It's work time right now. I want to keep plowing through. Otherwise, you know, I do a great deal to entertain everybody for about 6 hours, but this is hard work, lesson time. And you're not going to get these promises fixed any other way. Woe is me, says my mother, that thou hast borne me a man of strife and a man of contention to the whole earth. I haven't lent on usury, nor have men lent to me on usury, yet every one of them doth curse me. Now, I've known some people that say nobody could have as many people mad at him and be in God's will. How about Jeremiah? He said, everybody curses me. Where there's smoke, there's fire, friends. Jeremiah's got to do something wrong with that many people cursing him. Oh, no. As I talked about Joseph the other night, men of God been cursed at and lied on for centuries. That's not new. If you're not being cursed at and lied on, I doubt seriously you are a man of God. Check your preacher out. If he hasn't been cursed at and lied on recently, maybe he needs a new unction. Or maybe you need a new preacher. Now, there are a lot of local pastors doing the job. But I'm tired of these grinning glitter teeth people that everything's rosy all the time. It's no disgrace to be cursed at and get discouraged as a preacher. And the Lord said unto him, I chose you, you dirty little rat, when you were still the size of a worm. And you're not going to talk to me that way. The Lord had mercy on him. He knew what he had laid on the poor old guy. The Lord said, quit squalling. Verily it shall be well with thy remnant. Verily I will cause the enemy to entreat thee well in the time of evil and in the time of affliction. That 11th verse is promised 28 and 29. When he is crying out because of the pressure on him as he carries out his receivership job, God gives him a promise. Verily it shall be well with thy remnant. Now that must have raised some question in Jeremiah's mind because he was pretty much standing alone. Not only is he going to be well with him, but he's going to have somebody with him that qualifies as a remnant. You mean I can't have crowds like the Pope? No, you're going to have a remnant. But it's going to be well with thee, and I will cause the enemy to entreat thee well in the time of evil and in the time of affliction. That means that he's not going to get treated very well by God's people. The enemy's going to treat him well. You know, I think it's very interesting that 7-8 years preaching the gospel and giving my life to restore a church that had fallen in disrepair, and if I hadn't come to town, 580 families would never have been paid of their life savings. Nobody in Southern California and Northern California, New England will ever know what this would have been like had Faith Broadcasting Network gone under, and it was within a week of going under, and 580 families' life savings would have never been paid, and the state would have been able to point to a failure of a church as a reason why churches should not have freedom. That will never happen. And I came to town and stepped into that mess. I know what it is to be like a receiver and had to do the tough job of restoring a church and paying the debt and rallying a people that, like me, had not gotten the debt and received no benefit from it, to pay for the sake of God's honor that the church might be restored to strength, which it is. And I think it's very interesting that the church world didn't vindicate us. It was the worldly press that finally vindicated the truth and told the true story of Gene Scott and his church. God many times has had to turn to the so-called, quote, enemy. Verily, I will cause the enemy to entreat thee well in the time of evil and in the time of affliction. And then a very mysterious phrase, shall iron break the northern iron and the steel? I don't have a number on that. Just remember, I'm going to come back to it. Verse 11 is promised 28 and 29. And then in the 14th verse is promise number 30. And I will make thee to pass with thine enemies into a land which thou knowest not. For a fire is kindled in mine anger which shall burn upon you. Jeremiah knew about Egypt. He knew Egypt well. He's prophesying all the time things about Egypt. Where is this land that I will make thee to pass with thine enemies into a land that thou knowest not? Where did Jeremiah go? God gives him three major promises after he cried and squalled in his pressure cooker. It's going to be well with thy remnant. Your enemies are going to treat you well. And in the presence of your enemies, you're going to pass to a land you don't know about. Where? Where'd Jeremiah go? Now, why is it, pray tell me, there's only one place in the world that citizens proudly point to a grave of Jeremiah? Ireland. And why is it that scarcely a household in Ireland lacks a boy named Jeremy? You can't find his grave anywhere else. Now, what is it that caused those red-headed fighting Irishmen up there to say, we adopt Jeremiah. We're going to go out here and dig a hole and pile up a bunch of rocks and call it Jeremiah's grave. You think that's what happened? You know better. Go to page 837. Now he's prophesying again. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel. Verse 13, I will cast you out of this land into a land that ye know not, neither ye nor your fathers, and there shall ye serve other gods day and night, where I will not show you favor. That's not Assyria. That's not Babylon. They knew about Assyria. They knew about Babylon. They were going to be cast into a land they didn't know about. That's number 31. But then read verse 15. But the Lord liveth that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands whither he had driven them, and I will bring them again into their land that I gave unto their fathers. Behold, I will send for many fishers, saith the Lord, and they shall fish for them. They shall fish them. After will I send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill and out of the holes of the rocks. That 16th verse is promise number 32. Even though they're going to be scattered, known as not my people, not having mercy, God's going to send fishers and hunters after them. I'm one. I'm fishing. I'm hunting. That's what we're doing. We're fulfilling that promise. For mine eyes are upon all their ways. They're not hid from my face. Put 32A on that one. They may be lost to history. They're not hid from my face. Now, how can they be destroyed and gone if God still sees them? That's 32A. Verse 13 is number 31. Verse 16 is number 32. Verse 17 is 32a. Now go to page 860. Thus saith the Lord, David shall never want a man to sit upon the throne of the house of Israel. That's number 33. There it is reiterated again. The trustee is reminded by God, David shall never want a man to sit upon the throne of, not the house of Judah, the house of Israel. God is going to keep His word that the house of Israel will have the seed of David ruling over it. Where is that house of Israel, the lost tribes today, and where are they with the king that can trace his lineage to David? Once more, if it's not the British Empire, then Satan has stolen the promise from God. Neither shall the priests, verse 18, the Levites, want a man before me to offer burnt offerings and to continue and to kindle meat offerings and to do sacrifice continually. Those two verses, 17th and 18th, are 33a and 33b. Where have these been fulfilled? Now go to page 874. All these promises in Jeremiah. The word that Jeremiah the prophet spake unto Baruch. Page 874, chapter 45 of Jeremiah. The word that Jeremiah the prophet spake unto Baruch, the son of Neriah, when he had written these words in a book at the mouth of Jeremiah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, unto thee, O Baruch, thou didst say, Woe is me now, for the Lord hath added grief to my sorrow. I fainted in my sighing, and I find no rest. Not only did Jeremiah suddenly get discouraged and want to give up and get the promise that it would be well for his remnant, enemies would treat him good, and he would pass with enemies into a land he didn't know about, Baruch, his stenographer, gets a promise. Whole chapter. Why would God spend a whole chapter on this? 45th chapter of Jeremiah. He's moaning and groaning. Who wants to hear this crybaby? But then God says, Thus thou shalt say unto him, The Lord saith thus, Behold, that which I've built will I break down. That which I've planted I will pluck, even this whole land. And seekest thou great things for thyself? Seek them not, for behold, I will bring evil upon all flesh, saith the Lord, but thy life will I give unto thee for a prey in all places whither thou goest. This anticipates a lot of traveling. And God is now hung out there with this private chapter to Baruch, the servant of Jeremiah. He will never die at the hand of someone else. God says, I give you your life for a prey. That means he will die a natural death. And he's going to do a lot of traveling. And wherever he goes, everybody else may get killed. He won't. Isn't it interesting? Baruch goes to Egypt with Jeremiah, then disappears from scriptural literature. But Jeremiah, in the person of that strange old man, within 5 years, shows up with a daughter of a king and a servant named Simon Breck in Ireland. There are no vowels in the ancient Hebrew. Breck could just as easily be Baruch, because only the B and the R and the K sound are there. The vowels are missing, put in orally. We don't really know how it was pronounced. A servant named Simon Breck is still with him when he shows up in Ireland. That whole chapter is promise number 34. Now go to page 875. Fear not, verse 27 of the 46th chapter of Jeremiah. Fear not, O my servant Jacob, and be not dismayed, O Israel. For behold, I will save thee from afar off, and thy seed from the land of their captivity. Fear not, verse 28 says, O Jacob, my servant, saith the Lord, for I am with thee, and I will make a full end of all the nations whither I have driven thee. But I will not make a full end of thee, but correct thee in a measure, yet will I not leave thee wholly unpunished. Wherever these lost tribes go, God's going to make a full end of their captors. God's going to make a full end of the nations where they go, like a harvesting swath. When they pass through, the nations are ended where they go, but they will survive. They'll be punished, but a remnant will survive. That's the history of the Celtic tribes as they go across Europe. But if it's not them, who is it? That's promise number 35. Go to page 940. Prophecy number 36. It begins where I started preaching this morning, in the 37th chapter of Ezekiel. The valley of dry bones and the uniting of the two sticks that proves that the house of Joseph must be existing to be united with the house of Judah before the end comes. And if you want promise number 36a, promise 36 starts at verse 11 and runs to the end of the chapter. But in the middle of that is another promise. After the tribes of Judah, the country or the nation Judah is reunited with the nation Joseph, they are going to be restored in their land. And David, my servant, shall be king over them. They all shall have one shepherd. And my servant David shall be their prince forever. That's the last half of the 25th verse. That's promise 36a. The whole promise 36 is verse 11 through verse 28. Single out verse 24 and the last half of verse 25, the promise concerning David as king and as prince forever. And make that 36a. Okay? Go to page 996. And I think I've taken us through all of the messages or all of the promises that had to do with the message today. Amos is now speaking in chapter 9. Lo, I will command. Verse 9 of Amos chapter 9. That's promise number 37. Lo, I will command and I will sift. Literally, that word is cause to move the house of Israel among all nations. Now, surely by this time, you know that God knows the difference between the house of Israel and the house of Judah. He occasionally refers to both houses as Israel. But the house of Israel is the 10-tribe kingdom to the north. Lo, I will command and will cause to move the house of Israel among all nations, like as corn is sifted in a sieve, yet shall not the least grain fall upon the earth. And what do you think of that? How can they be lost if God says not the least grain lost? He will cause them to move through the nations. That's the history of the Celts. Go to page 195. Now I'm down in one of my favorite passages, Balaam's ass. That last promise was number 37. Can we rest for a minute or two? I've really been putting it to you. Now I want to take you to promise 38, clear through several promises, 39, 40, and 41, but it has to do with the story of Balaam and his ass. Now, I need to know. I don't want people who just watch me because they happen to turn by. I want you to try it once in a while, but I know where my audience lies. My audience ultimately lies with people that want to learn and see the veracity of God and His Word. I'm teaching on Lost Atlantis as I teach on Genesis. I'm teaching on the pyramid, and I dangled a bit earlier Stonehenge, to which we will go when I finish with the pyramid. I'm teaching on the lost tribes. I'm teaching on the stars to show that God is in control. He is what His name says. People say this and never even think about it. The Lord of hosts. That word means He controls everything. Inanimate objects, supernatural beings, both demons and angels, and all the hosts of mankind. I'm teaching to produce the faith that God never forgets a parenthesis in His speeches. And He makes every jot and tittle come true. I must get all these promises to break our traditions and let us honestly face up to the fact there are an awful lot of promises that have never been fulfilled in the Jew, the church, or Jesus. And they can only be fulfilled if the lost tribes can be found and identified. And I've got to lay this foundation for you to be able to appreciate properly the teaching that we are doing. And I'm well aware the teaching is much more intriguing and interesting per se. You know what these promises are like? It's forcing us to learn the alphabet that we're going to speak with. And memorizing an alphabet's not easy. But you can't go forward without the alphabet. Now, I'm up to 38. That's coming up next. I'm through 37. If it helped you, it's been worth it.